A paradox. American politics today are highly partisan, and yet independent and unaffiliated voters now represent the largest voting bloc in many states. What does this shift mean for the future of U.S. politics? What does it mean for Kansas politics? Is the time right for independent and third-party candidates? Jim Jonas is a political consultant based in Denver. He's been active in independent political reform efforts and candidate campaigns for nearly two decades. That includes managing Greg Orman's campaign for the U.S. Senate in 2014 as an independent candidate. Jonas is this year's Dole Institute Fellow and leader of a series on independent voters and candidates at the Dole Institute of Politics at the University of Kansas. Jackie Salet is president of independentvoting.org. It's one of the nation's leading organizing centers for independent voters. IV supports specific candidates, ballot initiatives, and legal work for nonpartisan primaries. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
So let me go back to my original statement. Highly partisan politics, lots of nonpartisan voters. Is that a paradox?
Well, it's what we have in the country today. And in one way, you could say it's paradoxical. But in another way, I think the rise of the independent voter, the rise of the number of people who consider themselves independents, is a function of it and a reaction to and an attempt to correct the hyperpartisanship of the way the political process is working. So yes, the two go together. They're opposing forces. And I think what the next 5 to 10 years in American politics is going to look like is the search for a resolution of that paradox or that conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that there is this cause and effect happening in American politics that are feeding off of each other. The more partisan we become, the more independents that are rising. And it's not just independent candidates, it's independent reform movements and trying to open up the system to make it more equitable and fair to those of us who choose not to belong to a political party.
Let's go back to, say, the previous decade or 20 years. What are some of the forces behind that rise in the number of independent voters?
There are a number of factors that you can look back to and say these were the beginnings of it. I don't think you can point to a single episode, but you can point to a few. And Jackie can talk about Ross Perot and some of those movements that happened at a national scale. But you can look at things like the 1994 GOP takeover of the Congress and the rise of that movement of Republicans. It got to a point where they were weaponizing things like media, where we didn't have that before, where we now had one party had their media outlets and the other party had a different media outlet. And it got to this place where purity of partisanship arose as well, so that you did not we had Blue Dog Democrats and you had Northeast liberal Republicans. But slowly over the last two decades, we've seen that erosion to where it's really difficult to not have party purity any longer. And that's a dangerous place.
Jackie?
Yeah. I think that going back to the early 1990s, which was the moment that the Perot phenomena exploded on the scene, and we saw, you know, suddenly this movement that had been largely invisible up until then suddenly surfaced, and it was referred to as the radical middle, that, you know, all this different nomenclature, which actually I think was really inaccurate in the following sense, which is that the Perot rebellion actually spanned the ideological spectrum from left to right. The people who came out and said, yes, it's time, as Perot was saying, to take our country back. This is our country. We own this country, but we're not acting like the owners of this country. That sentiment really cut across ideological lines and began a mobilization and a visualization of this new revolt. One of the forces, and I think Jim is pointing to some, one of the forces that was driving this, of course, was the arrival of globalization. And the question being raised as to what was the policy of our country going to be in the context of globalization? Who was going to get left behind? How was that transition, you know, which was dramatically upending economic norms, not just in the States, but all around the world. How is that going to be responded to? And I think that over the last 25 years or so, the experience of the American people from many, many different walks of life has been that the existing political parties, the existing ideologies, the existing distribution of power is not adequate to this new set of circumstances that has arrived. And so I think people are becoming independents by way of saying, we need something else. We need something different. We need a different approach and a different way to formulate, to guide, and to build consensus for public policy. What is that? And that's really, I think, what's at the heart of the independent movement now.
And to follow up on that, one of the other, I think, critical beginnings of what this is about is that there's a growing recognition that elections should serve voters instead of elections serving political parties. That's still a big hurdle that we have to get over in this country. And people think of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party as being elements of our government, and they are not. And we've got to get to this place where we recognize that they are private political corporations that control our very public elections. And we had to get to a place where that elections are about the individual voters and not about parties.
Let me go back in history a little bit, because the whole idea of primary elections being owned by the voters, I mean, you don't have to go that far back to when who was selected for the primaries was chosen by the party in a smoke-filled back room. And one could argue from a historical point of view that the primary system is very advanced as far as voter ownership compared to what it used to be.
So it's a little better than what it used to be. Yes, I agree with you. It's better than what it used to be. But, and Jackie can speak very eloquently about this, the parties are still very controlled by a hyper-select group of people who belong to that private organization. It is not a broad, open process where anybody can come in and choose it. The primaries are an integral piece of our elections. That's when the candidates are selected that everybody can vote for. And that process ought to be available for everyone to participate in.
Just a piece of that history, too. I think that coming out of the 1960s and all of the conflict revolving around the Vietnam War and our policy in the war raised a whole set of questions about how the parties should be conducting themselves, and in particular on the Democratic Party side of things, how the Democratic Party should be conducting itself. There were, you know, rules changes, you know, the McGovern rules and the trend towards greater primaries and away from caucuses and, you know, party bosses choosing nominees and all of what you're describing. And the party ultimately, I would say, reversed course and began to move in the direction of reinstituting the superdelegate rules and, you know, allowing closed primaries to continue in various states and finding ways to repress insurgencies that took place inside the party. And we saw that in very graphic terms, I think, in 2016 in the Sanders-Clinton contest, you know, where there was Sanders was enormously popular among independent voters. In the states where independent voters were allowed to participate, they came out in very, you know, very significant numbers to support him. They experienced being locked out in the closed primary states, you know, big states, New York, Pennsylvania, Florida, you know, places where they really wanted to drive that, and found that the party leadership was standing in their way of opening things up.
You mentioned those states that have closed primaries. Of course, Kansas is one of those states that has closed primaries. Jim, based on your work here in Kansas, can you tell me a little bit about the history of why Kansas has a closed primary system and some of the challenges that has posed?
Well, it's goes to when the Kansas Constitution was written by the that established were there to be citizen initiatives to allow for citizen-driven reforms to the system. And so since Kansas does not have it, how many states are there, Jackie, that have?
About half the states.
It's 26 or 24 or something like that have it. In those states that do have it, and I'm from neighboring Colorado, which does, and we're able to do things like open up primaries and fight for gerrymander reform and all these critically important reforms that are be beneficial to independent voters. But there is a growing independent movement, regardless of the ability for the citizenry to change the Constitution here in Kansas. We've seen it since when I was working for Greg Orman in 2014. We saw this enormous movement of independents looking for something different. We got to find a way out of this right, left, red, blue, false choice construct that the parties have created. And people are looking for other voices and other leaders to step in who are not part of either of those parties.
How do you go about making those changes when the people that make the rules are, by virtue of the system that elected them, partisan?
That's the paradox.
Yes, it is.
It's the paradox and the problem. No, for sure. You know, it's interesting. It's such an important question that you're raising. A lot when you talk with people about independent politics and building a movement of this kind and social change and so forth, you know, many people, including, you know, of course, many people in the progressive movement, will talk about how outsider movements raised issues like women's suffrage and abolition and civil rights and all of this. And those issues eventually became co-opted into one or the other major parties. In the case of the anti-slavery movement, it actually created a new party that put another party out of existence. And all of that. So, but the paradox here, as you're pointing to in your question, is that if the critical issue that's on the table now is partisanship, then can you expect the parties to step in and take over the fight against partisanship? Well, that is a real paradox or a real contradiction. And so, to some degree, I think we're not going to see that same paradigm repeat itself, that this social movement, which is a movement for expanding democracy, for more choice, for greater voice, which is really a movement to transfer power from the parties to the people, is not going to be championed by the parties. And so that's one of the reasons why the independent movement and the structural reform movement are so integrally linked to one another, because we're going to have to open up the process and re-engineer certain aspects of how we conduct elections such that independents can be fully empowered and at the table and play their role in changing the culture and addressing the partisan divide.
And I would say that there is a pathway to open up reform that could happen if there is a total meltdown from an electoral sense for one party or the other. The party that it falls completely out of favor would be smart to go after a great market opportunity, that there is this huge market out there for independence and reform. Mm-hmm. And if a party were to be smart about it and be the first mover on this to say, you know what, we're going to be the party of reform, you've got this huge market of people that are looking to join up. And if they miss that opportunity, they're going to miss it for generations.
Mm-hmm. So what you've just described is kind of what you were just talking about, Jackie, that when issues come up that are outside the party structure, that in the past, a lot of times what's happened is one of the political parties has moved to sort of co-opt that movement and taken up those issues as their own.
That's right. That's exactly right. And there is that wide open opportunity right now for a party to be a first mover on this. And what's the number, Jackie, on number of young people who are choosing not to belong to either political party?
71%.
It's an enormous number of the youngest generation. I mean, my oldest is 18 years old. I asked him, he said, oh, I'll be an independent. I have no interest in joining a party. None of my friends want to belong to a political party. I mean, what a market opportunity. And the parties are so stuck in the old conformity of, well, we've always done it this way, and that's the way we're going to continue to do it, and the party bosses want to do it this way, and made it impossible to really jumpstart that effort with young people. And the young people are going to change the country. They always have, and they have this opportunity now. And with 71%, my goodness, I mean, that is And it's just going to get bigger as we go. So it'll be fascinating to watch this over the next couple of cycles.
Jim Jonas, you managed Greg Orman's campaign for the U.S. Senate in 2014 when he ran as an independent. What kind of challenges do independent candidates face in general, but also specifically here in Kansas?
Yeah, independent candidates are at a huge disadvantage from the parties, and it starts, in my mind, from just basic infrastructural things. You start a campaign, if you're a Republican or a Democrat, you have data houses that you can go to, and you have party structures that have talented campaign staff, and you have lawyers, and you have consultants, and you have all these things that and the biggest one is you have donor roles. You have people who've given to Republicans and given to Democrats, and you can tap into all these things. Independents, you got to start from scratch. There is no independent infrastructure in the country currently. It's something that we're working on trying to fix. But it makes it really hard. It's a disincentive for independents to try to run because you've got to create all that from scratch. A team to go out and do field and a team to do communications. And if you've never done that before as an independent, it is really hard to do that. So when I started working with Greg, it really was from starting from zero and hitting the ground running as hard as we could. And it started with Greg's Rolodex of friends. That was our voter list. And that's really hard to overcome. So that's something that every time an independent runs, we should have, if we were smart, as a national movement, we'd come together and have a shared data arrangement the way that all the Republican candidates do and the way that all the Democratic candidates do. We'd come up with these infrastructural elements that every smart campaign needs to be successful. And we just didn't have that last time.
So are you suggesting what we really need is sort of rather than just registering as a Republican or a Democrat here in Kansas, that you could also register as an independent and that information would be collected the same way that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have access to people that register with the parties?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I don't want people to I'm not proposing an independent party. There is one that's getting started. Party of the Center here is an interesting idea that is getting rolling. But I would say that it's much more important to have those decades-long appended files that just get smarter every cycle, that the Republicans can tap into their Republican data companies. Democrats have their data companies. There is no independent data company, not currently. But we're starting to put those things together from movements across the country are finally starting to see if we're going to be competitive, we don't have to become a party, but we need to have some of those same infrastructural advantages that the parties have over us if we're going to be successful.
But isn't that also part of the challenge of an independent movement is that those independent voters may not have a lot in common other than the fact that they don't call themselves Republicans or Democrats?
Yes, but they are bonded by the fact that they are looking for something else. You know, and in February of 1992, when Ross Perot went on the Larry King show and he, you know, said, I'm thinking about maybe running for president as an independent, but the American people are going to have to step up and make that happen. He got 3 million phone calls in the first 24 hours. 3 million. Eventually, that force, that army, went out and got him on the ballot for that 1992 campaign. And all of this organic infrastructure literally sprung up overnight. In some respects, part of the difficulty in the early 1990s was that there was this huge outpouring that got created almost overnight from the bottom up. And how do you harness that? And mm-hmm. how do you train that? And how do you, you know, open a bank account for that? You know, the people in Dallas were going crazy. and Perot was a systems guy, moreover. So that I'm sure that made it all the more painful for him. So on the one hand, I think that the way that this develops is that on the one hand, we have to work to create a lot of this technocratic stuff, the yeah. database issues, the people who are experts in ballot access, the, you know, all of that kind of stuff, the rudimentary work that is, if you will, the nuts and bolts of how you do electoral politics in a technical sense. But in another way, it's also a historical process that we've seen these these explosions in which literally overnight a whole new infrastructure is created. And since the 1990s, I think that most of that activity has lived inside of the major parties. The Obama candidacy, what, in my opinion, was that. The Sanders candidacy was that. The fact of the matter is that for all of the talk about we had to do campaign finance reform, we had to do campaign finance reform, we had to do campaign finance reform, Bernie Sanders ran for president and essentially took care of the issue. It turned out you actually didn't need campaign finance reform. You just needed to have a candidate that everybody wanted to give money to. Goodbye. The issue that had dominated the political reform landscape for 40 years.
Right.
You know, Donald Trump was that candidate in the general election in 2016. Whatever you think of Trump, he was that candidate. And he captured that zeitgeist in the American people. But all of that happened within the parties. I think that what, in some ways, what we're looking at is when, how, and under what circumstance does that rebellion surface again outside of the parties, and how prepared will we be
to channel?
To channel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you look at what happened in France with En Marche and Macron. Everybody said that'll never happen in France. I mean, it can happen here. Mm-hmm. It really can. And what I've seen in the years that I've worked on campaigns and elections, that money has a huge influence and money matters, but nothing trumps message and momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got the message that is connecting with voters and you hit them at the right time and you get the momentum in a campaign, nothing will overcome that.
Oh, absolutely.
So you have a candidate, message, momentum, you can overcome anything that the parties will throw at us.
I'm not so sure I would agree with that. Mm. Look at the candidacy of Bernie Sanders. I mean, for all his successes, he only got so far.
Well, he was also limited as a candidate for who he represented. He's a socialist. He wasn't even a Democrat running in the Democratic primary. That's a disadvantage. And he definitely had message and momentum, but it was within a certain segment of the voter. And he was attracting voters from across the spectrum. Trump and Sanders, two sides of the same coin. I mean, totally different messages, totally different methods to their madness, but they were speaking the same kind of gut issue things that are happening in America, that this is the country's in trouble and we got to do something about it. And they were able to attract people, and that's the message piece that I think is so powerful. Bernie had to overcome a ton to get where he was, and to say that was not successful, that was hugely successful. How would he say it? Hugely successful.
Exactly. And then he was also faced, I think, with, you know, this is so fascinating, isn't it? He was faced with a crossroads question, which is, having come to the end of the primary process, not winning the nomination, do you stay and commit to the Democratic nominee, who arguably was antithetical to everything that the Sanders movement had stood for? And in fact, you know, the progressive movement had been fighting and resisting Clinton-esque globalization since Bill Clinton was president of the United States. Do you stay and get behind that, or do you take the risk and walk? And do you put together some kind of independent candidacy, independent party, independent whatever? Well, the answer at the time was no, because that would elect Donald Trump. Well, he didn't do it, and the country elected Donald Trump.
Jim, before you took up the banner of nonpartisan politics, your career had a distinctly Republican path. You worked on Bob Dole's presidential campaign back in 1988, worked on Senator Lamar Alexander's presidential campaign in 1996. At what point did you decide, I need to rethink this traditional Republican-Democratic paradigm?
Yeah, I grew up in a Republican household. My grandfather was the congressman from the nearby district, and my great-grandfather was the first Republican elected to Congress post-Reconstruction in North Carolina. So Western North Carolina, we never seceded, you know, voted like we shot, as we used to say. I came to it by tradition and by familial history of just knocking on doors from the little time I was a little kid. And I got into politics because I love politics, and I fell into Republican politics, and I was never an ideologue about it. But I was on the path of being a Republican consultant. I worked on a lot of Republican campaigns. And I got to the point in after the 96 cycle where I worked for Lamar Alexander's presidential campaign and really looked at it and said, do I feel comfortable with where this party is headed on a number of issues that I didn't think were historically Republican in the way that they treated individuals and their some of the foreign policy decisions that they were making. It was not where the Republican Party that I was a part of. So I like to use the Ronald Reagan line that I did not leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left me. And I truly, honestly believe that. Do I still feel the tug of Republican politics? I think we all, it's like leaving a religion, you know, that you're always going to have a little bit of it in you still, that I can still have conversations with my dad who will never not be a Republican. but I think there's a lot of us that are out there that are former somethings and recognize that the old ways of the parties have become counterproductive. And we've got to find a path to getting politics back on track. And for me, it was working from outside the party instead of working within it.
Jim Jonas is a political consultant and this year's Dole Fellow at the Dole Institute of Politics. Jackie Salet is president of independentvoting.org. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.